newsstand sales. But the covers threatened the magazine's cultural legitimacy, the real attraction for its true audience, and for many who worked there. Nearly 40 years is long enough to make the us of back then feel like they. We were younger. Kidder, 27, Todd, 32, and each of us was trying to stake out a literary future. To Todd, editing at The Atlantic granted prestige, like owning a fine antique. If he'd been in charge, the magazine would have reverted to the monochrome covers of its heyday. As for Kidder, the idea of publishing articles at The Atlantic was more than exciting enough, since he would have been grateful to be published anywhere. Phone calls were expensive back then, and allowances for research miserly. For a young writer short of funds, it was convenient to spend time in the building, camping out, as it were, in one of its many vacant back offices, and using the magazine's phones for long-distance calls to sources for articles. Kidder spent many days and quite a few nights in the building, and many hours working with Todd, whose office had a fireplace and a view. After-hours provisions could be found in the bar, in Manning's office down the hall. We called each other by our surnames, as our sergeants had in Army basic training. To Kidder, a childhood for Todd seemed improbable. He must have been born old, and probably born ironic to boot. To Todd, and practically everyone else, Kidder was young beyond his years. He was plainly ambitious, but his self-esteem ranged from abject to grandiose. Once, at a Christmas party that went on too long, he confronted Bob Manning and announced, "I'm the best damn journalist in the Western Hemisphere." Hungover and contrite the next morning, he was comforted by Todd, who said, "At least you didn't claim the whole world." Each imagined himself forbearing of the other. Kidder wrote and rewrote many versions of his first Atlantic article about a mass murder case in California. He had imagined the piece as a sequel to In Cold Blood. At some point, Bob Manning sent the manuscript back to Todd, having scrawled on it, "Let's face it, this fella can't write." Todd kept this comment to himself and merely told Kidder that the piece still needed fixing, and the rewriting continued. A long association had begun. Todd knew only that he had a writer of boundless energy. For Kidder, to be allowed not just to rewrite, but to rewrite ad infinitum was a privilege, preferable in every way to rejection slips. And for Todd, it was possible to imagine that a writer willing to rewrite might turn out to be useful. Todd once remarked to a group of students, never expecting he would be quoted, "Kidder's great strength is that he's not afraid of writing badly." The truth was that Kidder was afraid of writing badly in public, but not in front of Todd. Kidder would give him pieces of unfinished drafts. He would even read Todd passages of unfinished drafts, uninvited, over the phone. Very soon, Todd understood that he was being asked for reassurance, not criticism, and would say, "It's fine, keep going." When a draft was done, Todd would point out some problems, and another rewrite would begin. That ritual established itself early on and persisted through many articles and Kidder's first two books. A time came, midway through the writing of Among School Children, about a fifth-grade teacher, when Kidder began revising pages before Todd had a chance to read them. This was a means of delaying criticism forever. No doubt that was Kidder's goal, and he could remain happily unaware of it as long as he kept on rewriting. Things went on that way for a while until Todd said, in the most serious tone he could muster, "Kidder, if you rewrite this book again before I have time to read it, I'm not working on it anymore." Kidder restrained himself, and the former routine was reestablished. Eventually, The Atlantic changed hands. Its book publishing arm was sold off, its headquarters relocated, its old building renovated into a corporate office. We lingered for a time, working under a new head editor, William Whitworth, who was, to both of us, exemplary. He once told Kidder, "Every writer needs another set of eyes." When Todd moved on to do his own writing and to edit books, Kidder followed him. This book is, in part, an account of lessons learned by a writer and an editor working together over nearly 40 years. Good prose is a...